tweet at TodaySOR.
The first year of a child's life, especially in the case of a first child, can be a magical time for parents, but it can also pose big challenges as both mother and father struggle with sleep deprivation, their own radically changed relationship, and isolation from work, colleagues and friends, all of which can take a big toll on both men and women, leading in some cases to serious mental health issues. To discuss it further, I am joined by GP and mental health specialist Dr. Harry Barry, by Dr. Anne-Marie Craven from the Department of Psychology at the University of Limerick, and by psychotherapist Enda Murphy. I think it's only fair, because you're in our Limerick studio, first of all, and you are a recent mother for the second time around, Anne-Marie, to just talk us through how it's been for you.
Oh, well, the first time or the second time?
You decide.
To be honest, the first time was a shock to the system, Sean. I don't think people really prepare you for the change, and I don't think anything really can. But I actually said to a friend last week, why didn't you tell me what it was like? And she said, well, people are always excited about the birth of a child. I didn't want to spoil it for you, okay? But what I would say is the second time around has been so much easier. The first time you can be anxious, you're always worried, are you doing things right? You know, the second time you're a little bit more sure of yourself. You know all the social activities you can get out to, and you know how to rely on people for support a bit better. So it does get easier, but I'm always, when I hear someone's expecting their first baby, I always keep a little bit of an eye on them in the aftermath.
Well, good for you. Now, Harry Barry, it's fair to say, I suppose, there's a certain level of stress that's part and parcel of having a newborn baby in the household. Not going to be a walk in the park for anyone, is it?
No, I think, Sean, there's a number of great challenges for both men and women. I think it's very important here that we make it clear that this is a child arrives not just to the mum, but she arrives to the mum and the dad and the whole relationship. So the first thing that I think is really absolutely critical is incredible lack of sleep. Insomnia or lack of sleep, simply because of the way that the child uproots the whole thing. So for at least 6-9 months, the poor couple are nearly walking around in a daze because they are getting so little sleep, especially the woman, especially if she's breastfeeding. And that, of course, we know now, there's a huge amount of evidence that shows if you have a chronic lack of sleep, that leaves you very open to mood swings and anxiety and all the rest. And other practical things, I think a lot of women are recovering from the trauma of childbirth, which we could almost do another subject on, because they're huge trauma. And women will often quietly tell you that they're nearly ashamed of the way they feel now, the damage that they feel was inflicted
they're
on
them. They're supposed to be sunny side out, yes, happy and welcome.
And I think women need to come forward and talk more about this, because I think it's a big issue. I think isolation, especially for the mum or the dad, if they're minding the kids at home. And I think other practical things.
Andy, you we'll come back to some of those, Harry. Yeah. Sorry, Andy, you've had personal experience of this following the birth of your second son.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it?
Oh, God. You know, people say, how do you cope with something like that? You don't. You know, how do you not cope? You wake up in the morning, it's still there. So how you cope with it, you don't. You know, they eventually grow up, you know. But a father said to me one time, he says, how do you know you're struggling with your kids, you know? He says, when sex is spelled S-L-E-E-P, you don't go anywhere. So my own experience was, and, you know, curious to what Anne-Marie was saying, she said she found the first one more difficult. I actually found the second one more difficult, all right? And about 10% of fathers become postnatally depressed. And looking back in it now, I think I went through about a depression when that actually occurred. And some people would say, God, you know, you aren't the one giving birth and everything like that. But May was actually quite ill after a second. So like, kind of, I was working 14-hour days, and I was also having to look after the baby, you know, and there was an awful lot of childcare going on. But it's something that I would see more and more regularly, because as gender roles become irrelevant, where dads are doing as many night feeds as mothers are doing, everything like that, we're actually starting to inherit the mental health characteristics and the problems that mothers are actually inheriting. And I think the same thing happens to me. You'd think as a psychotherapist I would have actually figured out what was going on. But myself and Harry were talking afterwards. Years ago it was called agitated depression, and it's where anxiety is the predominant role. All right, I didn't have this I'm a failure bug going on in my head, but I had the washing machine going on in my head. All right, my sleep was all over my head. I had the early morning awakening. My concentration was going on. All right, and it was just Groundhog Day, and it was just going on and on and on. And the restless, irritable, discontent, the low frustration tolerance, I was just, as Harry often says, tired but wired. And I was like that for months afterwards.
Yeah, and Anne-Marie, would you say, like, are we failing fathers as much as we fail mothers, perhaps, in understanding and in accommodating them in their needs?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this, and, you know, when you go through the process of pregnancy and childbirth and the postnatal appointments, there's actually no point, Sean, where there's definitely an opportunity for someone to ask about the mental health of fathers. Now, of course, the mental health of mothers is so important, and we're going through the physical process of carrying the child and so on. But if there's no actual chance to ask how the dad is getting on, it's not going to be very surprising if a problem does develop. And what's interesting as well is, even though there's around 10% of fathers might experience postnatal depression or depression during their partner's pregnancy, that number is quite a bit higher if the mother has a mental health issue. So I do think we are failing fathers if, when a mother presents with a mental health issue, we don't also ask about the father too.
Yeah, and now Harry talked about just the whole question of sleep, and you've just got to adjust to the sleep deprivation and so forth. What do you say to the idea that maybe mothers and fathers too, maybe to a lesser extent, you know, you sleep when the baby sleeps? What do you make of that?
Oh, well, people would say this to me, and it's a lovely idea. I'll sleep when the baby sleeps. I'll cook when the baby cooks. You know, I'll do laundry when the baby does laundry, and I've actually found that quite irritating the first time around, but this. Second time, what we do now is prioritise sleep. So if you have an opportunity, go to sleep. I got a sleep mask, I put that on, turn off the phone, go to sleep. And you know what? After sleep, everything is so much easier. So if someone says it to you, they do mean well. But you know what? Prioritise sleep, and that can go a long way, I think.
Harry?
Yeah, I think this is really very important. I think it's also very, very important that that we designate how does it feel when you slip from just being tired and stressed out and worn out and you slide into depression. Because remember, about 20% of us, 1 in 5, possibly even up as much as 1 in 4 women will get postnatal depression, mm-hmm. and about 10% of men. So really important that you recognise how you're going to feel, that it's not just tiredness, but you're going to have this incredible low mood, complete lack of enjoyment. Really critical thing for me is lack of bonding with the child. It's just, you suddenly find that you can't bond with your child. Then you feel guilty and you feel ashamed. And you're going around in your head that you're useless, that you're a worthless mother, you're a worthless person. And this goes on and on and on. And of course, the more you stop bonding, the guiltier you are, the more depressed you become, and it becomes a vicious circle. And shame is what stops so many women coming for help. What would people think of me? I'm supposed to be perfect, like social media royalty, do you know what I mean? With everything going on wonderfully well. And here is me feeling absolutely terrible, not able to bond with my own child. So it's really, really important that we talk about this, we identify these, and we say, look, if you're like this, this is postnatal depression and you definitely have to come for assistance.
And what about the role of family? So just looking at our text line here, 51551. Sean, we had our third child recently and both our families have run a mile, leaving myself and my husband trying to cope with everything. Not even an offer of a few hours for us to have a night together. Where's the village gone?
Believe it or not, what most people, like, what actually happens is that people say, God, you know what? They've got three very young children. I'm not going to bother them by coming in and expecting them to entertain me. And that's more often what actually happens. I know the exact same happens to us. And I've often felt it myself. You know, like if a friend has a new baby or something like that, I wouldn't dream of actually calling over. I might make contact with them by WhatsApp, but I wouldn't dream of calling over and expect them to be getting out of the jimmies, all right, for the first month. But
so, you know, maybe the advice of that parent is what? Just them know you can.
Let them know, yeah, listen, I'm feeling a bit lonely here. Or like, kind of, you know, a little bit of adult company would be nice. And I think you might actually, people might actually respond
to that.
Yeah,
you know, I think there's a very important word here, it's called help. So I think we need to be able to put up the hand and honestly go to friends and family members and say, look, I'm really struggling at the moment. I'd really appreciate, you know, the odd little bit of assistance, maybe coming in for an hour or two, giving us a chance to get some sleep or whatever like that. Don't be afraid to ask.
And Henry, another one. Sean, when I had my first child, much longed for after 7 years, I missed the friends and coffee breaks and social interaction of work.
Oh, I can identify with that. I was quite happy to go back to work that time, though maybe less so after two of them. I think it takes time to build a new sort of social life around having a child. But there is one out there. There's lots of coffee, there's cakes, there's baby swim, baby massage. It can take a while, but if you can develop this new network, and I've mentioned before that public health nurses are great sources of information about developing that network while you're on leave.
Yeah. Another one, I gave birth in 2018. It was the most traumatic experience of my life. I was left with physical and mental scars. My baby's birthday was jointly the worst and best day of my life.
Oh, absolutely. When your opening comments was, you know, having a baby can be magical. I said, the first thought in my head was, when does the magic start?
Oh, listen, I mean, I've been there. OK, I missed one of them five times. And there is a little privilege and joy to be in on a little bit of creation. I mean, we wouldn't want to get overly negative about this,
believe
would we?
It or not, no, like, you know, but Anne-Marie has actually alluded to it a number of times and Harry's alluding to it as well. We think that if we actually tell parents, listen, this is what the reality of it is like, all right, you know, that we're in some way going to put them off or we're going to put them down or we're going to do this. But we create this illusion of this magical world where, you know, the concert orchestra will be playing up in the clouds and everything will be hunky-dory, when in fact it's actually crap. Now, the only reason I didn't actually go down into the gutter, all right, was that where postnatal distress becomes postnatal depressed is when we abnormalise our experience and we think that there's something wrong with us. So when Harry said there about, you know, asking somebody to come over and give us a hand, somebody who's postnatally depressed will say, well, God, they're going to know how little I'm able to cope here. And you fall into the hole of what's called confirmation bias. The worse you feel yourself, the better it is you will see everybody else doing. So you'll see that Mary Jo has actually put on a bit of makeup today. The baby's there. God, look, they're actually colour coordinated and everything. And you then start reinforcing all of this to yourself. And you only see this. And Harley Gavars has a lovely expression. A mother's place is in the wrong.
Yeah, but do you not, Harry, get a certain sense that, OK, you're worn out, you're ground down, the insomnia, whatever else is there. But somehow, you know, occasionally you get this wonderful cure from the child with a smile.
Absolutely. I mean, the child, it's that.
And the shaking he said vigorously there.
No, but I do. I think there are these moments, these very close moments where you're bonding with your child that are very important. But I think that I'd like to come back to that lady. She's actually identifying something really important here, that many, many women feel that nobody has really acknowledged the trauma to their bodies physically, not even just to their mental health and to all the other things, but the actual trauma to their body. Because so many women feel almost, the word that some women have used to me, they almost feel violated, do you know what I mean, after the whole incident.
Yeah, and I suppose if it's a difficult birth.
If it's a difficult, and then they have this anxiety about, you know, further pregnancies and are they still as attractive, you know, and physically and all the rest.
Like, imagine you've just had a cesarean operation. You've actually had major abdominal surgery, and within about 3 or 4 hours of you having major abdominal surgery, you're given this baby and told to look after it. So my only, what I've experienced, right, because both of ours were actually a cesarean, all right, was that, and I'd ask Anne-Marie this, and I'd ask other mothers this, is the trauma after the birth, is it worse? The post-op recovery, is it worse after the cesarean or is it worse after an actual natural birth?
Well, I can't have no comparisons. I've only not had a C-section. But I think the general question about trauma, you know, there's not a good opportunity after the birth of the child to discuss how it all went and what happened, you know. And I think that could help a lot of people talk through it at that point, as well as all the stuff about the care of the newborn and so on.
Mm. Another one, sleep deprivation, isolation, post-birth trauma. It's so nice to hear a panel of men and women talking about how difficult it is and how we should acknowledge it and learn to ask for help. That's the point you really make,
Harry. That's the real secret. I think if I had my way, what we should be doing, firstly, is all of us should be getting more and more information out there. We need to get more information out through programmes like this about what the reality is. When I'm preparing somebody, believe it or not, who's been maybe struggling with their mental health for birth, one of my questions is, or one of my statements is, it's going to be Armageddon.
Prepare
and
for
we
the
have
worst.
A good laugh. But, you know, one lady came back to me and said, do you know, it was really great. I was ready for it. I was prepared. I knew what was coming. Do you know?
It's not a bed of roses. Hi, Sean. I'm a little worried about my wife. She seems to be finding life with our one-year-old very hard. I support her and help out in every aspect, but it doesn't seem to be enough. She misses her old life. It feels like she holds it against me a bit. It's putting a strain on our relationship, and our sex life is practically non-existent. I've tried to address it, but she brushes it off. Any advice?
Oh, absolutely. And this would be classic, all right? And, you know, if you listen to the clue in the email, she misses her old life. Mm-hmm. You know, not every mother is a natural, like, kind of, this is a magical experience. This is the only reason I've been put on me on this life. The adaptation, I always said, you know, life was very easy when there was only myself and the dog. And then, of course, you know, you get married, and then, of course, kids come along. And once the first arrives in, that's it, your life is radically altered. So she's having, you know, we learn how to control our lives. We learn how to control situations. We don't teach ourselves how to adapt. And poor this woman is not learning how to adapt, and she's thinking she's either all in one. And
but what should this husband do now?
I think what this husband needs to sit down and be incredibly supportive and say, look, you clearly are not happy, do you know what I mean? Perhaps maybe at home with the child. What can we do to change this situation? What can I do to assist here? For example, would you like to go back to some part-time kind of work? Could I be of assistance? Could I? So in other words, by being with her, validating her, how she feels, and trying to assist her to move forward, it will bring the relationship back into
Anne-Marie, what are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts as well would be, sometimes people ask the woman, you know, well, what can I do to help? But you know what's 10 times better than someone asking? Is someone just doing, you know? So take the baby for the day. I mean, it's a year old. You know, just take the baby off, let her do what she likes, but don't put it on her to resolve it entirely, you know. Give her some space. You're not just helping, you're also parenting.
Okay, now, we want to talk as well just a little bit about our conversation that we're going to have next month. Yeah. You're here on December the 11th. You want to talk about blended families, and you're inviting questions from listeners.
Yeah, what we're actually talking about is that an awful lot of families are no longer just the traditional mother, father and two children. That families have split up and there's difficulties and there's new relationships. So the term that's actually used is blended families. And what we're inviting listeners to come in with is how coping strategies of how to deal with parents who have actually split up, our children, or what do I do?
Yeah, because I think what we have to start accepting is that this creates huge pressure on many, many couples and on the children. And lots of the children get lost in the middle of this. So it'd be wonderful to see what people think about this. And we'd like to kind of discuss this. And
I'm
look
sure
at
this is something you've come across yourself, Anne-Marie, as well.
Well, I don't have it in my personal life, but thankfully, actually.
No, but I mean in your social circle.
Yeah, absolutely, actually. A lot of people on my maternity leave circuit are from blended families, and it certainly seems to pose its own challenges, as well as give them actually a wider social circle to rely on during this time too. So.
Okay, well, that's, as I say, on the 11th of December, just in about 3 weeks' time or thereabouts. My thanks to you all for being with us today again. Dr. Harry Barry, Anne-Marie Craven and Enda Murphy.